WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota. This is Johannes Werner with your WSLR News headlines for Thursday, April. Red tide outbreaks in Florida waters through mitigation rather than prevention. HB 1565 extends the Florida Red Tide Mitigation and Technology Development Initiative, which was created in 2019 and was set to expire next year. The initiative is a partnership between the Fish and Wildlife Research Institute and Moat Marine Laboratory. DeSantis signed the bill at an event at Florida Gulf Coast University's Kaepernick Education and Research Center in Naples on Tuesday. The measure requires the Department of Environmental Protection to ease regulations and permitting processes that could slow Moat's red tide mitigation efforts. The budget, which DeSantis has not yet received from the legislature, includes $20 million for efforts to combat algae blooms and $22 million for red tide research. Within a few months, scientists at the Manatee County-based Roskamp Institute plan to start administering a new drug to slow the progression of Alzheimer's disease. That's according to a report by the Bradenton Herald. Leqembi is not a cure, but the FDA-approved Alzheimer's drug has been shown to slow the rate of decline in patients. On Wednesday, Dr. Fiona Crawford, president and CEO of Roskamp Institute, announced a $9 million fundraising campaign for a 10,000 square foot expansion of the campus on Whitfield Avenue in South Manatee County. In the first initiative of its kind, a new 49-unit downtown workforce housing community called On the Park is in the works in Sarasota, with half of its apartments to be set aside for employees of the sheriff's office. Developed by workforce housing experts One Stop Housing, On the Park will sit on a nearly one-acre parcel of land on School Avenue across from Payne Park that was donated by a prominent real estate businesswoman, Michael Saunders. The project came together late last year. One Stop managing partner Mark Vengroff told the Herald Tribune, "The site plan for On the Park must go now before the county for approval. Vengroff hopes to break ground later this year with possible completion in 2025. This has been Johannes Werner with your WSLR News headlines for Thursday, April 25th.
Welcome to The Detail. I am your host, Kathy Antunes, and you are listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida. You know, we usually talk about local politics here, but I have such an exciting topic. I'm going to give a shout out to my friend Eileen Hampshire, who made me aware of the work these two gentlemen are doing that is truly shattering world records and ushering in a totally new age in aviation. My guests today are Javier Marino and Miguel Iturmendi. They hail from Spain, but you both live here in Sarasota, and you have for quite some time. And Miguel has garnered many aviation awards and many records, but now the two of you are working on an electric airplane that you just recently broke a record. I'm going to ask you about that, but your goal is to take this airplane into the stratosphere. How exciting. And it's happening here in Sarasota. So I'm going to start, Miguel, if you could just kick us off. I want to ask you both about kind of how you got to Sarasota. Let's just start there, and how you got into aviation. So, Miguel.
Hi, Kathy. Nice to be here with you and Javier talking about this important topic, which is sustainability in the world of aviation. Like you mentioned, I'm originally from Spain and went to college in Oklahoma. And then, like most people that live in Sarasota and not from here, I just came as soon as I could. And moved here after grad school in 96 and been here since then, you know.
Mm-hmm. And Javier, how about you?
Hi, Kathy. It's a pleasure to be here.
So great to have you both.
I moved here in 1985. I got a contract with the Fell Entertainment Group, and I've been here since then. In 2005, I decided to start my own business, and I'm here. And we met each other many years ago, and we decided to be part of this. But I've been in Sarasota since 1985.
So your background is more in the entertainment world and working on projects, putting projects together. That's right.
Yes. My background is events, mainly events. And lately, in the last 15 years, I've been putting together projects and do a lot of worldwide, not only here in the United States, but in Japan, in South America, Europe. That's what we're doing right now.
And you had kind of walked away, or, you know, you had kind of put that to bed, or you were done with that work part of your life. And then, Miguel, how did it come about that the two of you started working together? Because those are very different. You're an engineer, Miguel. You're a test pilot. You know, you've been flying for a very long time. How did it work out that you two started working together?
Sure. It's kind of an interesting story. We met at the Delta counter in Madrid.
Oh, my gosh.
Flying to the United States.
And that may not always be the easiest place, I guess. Maybe the airport counter.
Yeah. So we struck a conversation, and he says, "Where do you live?" And I'm like, "You're probably not gonna know it. It's in Florida. It's a medium-sized town, and probably a large town by now." But this is 20 years ago. And he said, "Yeah, me too. Whereabouts?" And I said, "Sarasota." And he said, "I live in Sarasota." And then we realized I met his wife at a coffee shop 5-6 years prior to that. So he was aware of me, and I was aware of him. So we became friends. We both follow the same soccer team, the Real Madrid, and we get together that. Normally, if I'm in town and in Keys in town, we both travel quite a bit. Once a week, we will go to Epicure and have lunch. And
I love Epicure.
We were just there Monday night with another couple. So anyway, we were already friends for a long time. When I started the project, I was doing it out of frustration. I was in a similar project in Switzerland, and we weren't making any progress. And so I decided to leave the project and kind of start my own project.
Your own.
Within the first week or two after I came back from Switzerland, I was talking to him and say, "Hey, do you think you could help me with this?" And I knew his set of skills have to do with project management and events and
logistics.
All of that. So he said yes, and
I said yes. And from that point on, and he was very precise on what he said. He said, "Remember, we started this project. There is no money involved. There is going to be hard days, long days." And do you want to be part of it? And of course, I say yes. And here today.
And that was a little bit over 2 years ago.
So what we're talking about is you've built this airplane. Right?
Yes and no.
Okay.
The part of the fuselage is made by somebody else. And the reason is because a European manufacturer called Pipistrel. The center part of the fuselage is very, very light, very well built. So we built part of the wings, the elevator, and all of the systems. So the motor controller, the battery management system, the power distribution unit, propeller, mass, relays, cables, the batteries, of course, they're made from cells that come from Asia. And so all of that is made here in Sarasota in our facility near the airport.
So tell me about these world records. You recently just went to 22,000 feet.
Yeah.
For those of us who aren't in the aviation world, what does that mean? What's going on in this, the race for an electric airplane, I guess?
Yeah, so... maybe I should frame it in what is that we're trying to do first.
Yeah, sure.
So your listeners can understand. So the goal of the project is three things at the same time. You know, so we have three goals. The first one is the technological development. You know, we want to produce basically a technology demonstrator that can show the world that electric aviation can be apples to apples with regular aviation. Regular aviation,
fossil
I mean,
fuel.
Yeah, internal combustion engine, just like, you know, legacy technology. So that's one. So it has to do with high altitude and going higher than you can with a combustion engine.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first goal of the project. The second goal has to do with sustainability, right? So while we're not there yet, neither with cars or aviation, especially not with aviation, these are the first steps to showcase a technology.
Yes.
The world records are a great way to get a seal of approval and demonstrate the technology.
And show people that it works.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And instead of putting marketing and nice pictures and videos and all of that, having an international organization and a national organization, the NAA, said, yep, they did this, right?
Yeah.
And the third goal of the project is to, you know, so the first ones are exploration and innovation. The third one is inspiration. We want to inspire science, technology, engineering, and mathematics students, you know, younger people, by doing presentations and by involving them. We have several local interns, you know, that are in engineering school and they work on the weekends or whenever they can. One of them is going with us to Lake Tahoe in about 10 days when he finished his finals.
Yeah, because now when I met you, Javier, a week ago, you were sharing with me how the United States is not, we're not producing, young people aren't going into engineering at the rate they are in other countries, and we need them. Can you tell us
about that? Yeah,
that
is correct. We are trying to, through, like Miguel say, the inspiration for these young people is to get them into schools and to get them to like engineering, and for us, especially in aviation, aeronautics, or aerospace. But that's what we're looking for these young people to get motivated. That's why we have the interns. Not only they help us out, but they learn different things that they're not going to learn in school. So,
You know, when I was in high school, I was one of the math nerds, you know, had girlfriends. We were in the calculus class. And these folks, you know, a lot of kids who, math was fun. My dad was a physics professor. He had a PhD in physics. Yeah, so we grew up, my siblings and I, with just an appreciation of science and math, although, oh gosh, if I asked my dad for help with my homework, I'm curious if your daughter would take a half hour. I'm just like, I want to know the answer to B, Dad. But he made sure that I really understood it. But there were kids who were like, why do I need to know this? I'm never going to use this. But obviously, it's amazing to me, you guys look like an analogy like Bill Gates in his garage starting Microsoft.
It's a little bit like
that. You really are like that with an airplane.
Yeah. Let me go back for a second to the topic of inspiration, right? And young people. Young people are impatient. 10 minutes to them is like an hour to us.
Yeah,
you know, like
I know.
They want things. So, and they're very visual and tactile, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So getting them involved to actually build something, even when you're in college, it's if they can, you know, for kids, normally they don't like math or physics because it's too abstract.
Right. Yes.
That's why hands-on experience is so important. So when you get them involved on building something and they can see it and touch it, you know, we're a sponsor-driven organization. And the way to get a sponsor on board is to touch the airplane and get inside the airplane because they start fantasizing. We all do it. We're like that.
Yeah.
It's hard to sell a car if you can see it on the internet, but if you get on it and you drive it and it accelerates
totally
and it smells,
So
we're trying to inspire young people by getting them involved in touching it. Good thing about our airplane, Kathy, is that it's very easy to transport. It comes apart in a trailer, in a 30-foot trailer, and literally in 30 minutes it's in the box in the trailer, and we can take it. We have taken it all over the world, universities.
You've taken it to the mall, to the university town center mall.
I thought that was an insane idea that Javier had, but it turns out it could be done.
And you put so you kind of took the wings off, right, and brought it in. And
yes,
then,
and we brought into the mall the UTC mall is a very an organization that they believe in showcase the plane and show it to the community. So we brought it there, and there was a lot of people that day that they have a lot of questions. We were there all day. It was a long day.
A lot of kids.
There were a lot of children. Yeah.
And they're the ones that have the most inspiring questions, the kids, more than the parents. So it was a great day.
Yeah. So when I was going back to my school days, I read Childhood's End by Arthur C. Clarke. And I see that, Miguel, you were a student of Arthur C. Clarke. So I want to ask you, tell us about the space mafia.
Yeah. So, when I explain this, I'm not saying I was misquoted. I was not a student of his. He was the counselor.
Oh, okay.
At this university called the International Space University, which was founded by basically the European Space Agency and NASA and other space agencies that donated money and time and resources
to
create.
So let me jump in. Yeah. So people know Arthur C. Clarke. If you don't know, he wrote 2001: A Space Odyssey. Just tons of science fiction literature. He conceived of a satellite before there was a satellite.
Yeah, so
this imagination inspiration factor was huge with him.
Yeah, so Arthur C. Clarke was, the creator of the satellite. He wrote a paper in 1946 for the Royal Astronautical Society in England, where he in detail described and had a rough drawing of a satellite. Mm-hmm. So Arthur C. Clarke was a scientist before he was a writer. That's important to say because, you know, while he's known for the for his
writing.
Book, the 2001, and later the 1969 Kubrick movie, which I love, he's really like a serious scientist and a visionary. So I got to meet him 30 years ago, and he passed away since then. And he was in a wheelchair at the time, but it was nevertheless really interesting. Mm-hmm. I also, and her name escaped me. We did have as one of our summer program teachers. Have you seen the movie Contact?
Yeah,
I love that movie.
Yeah,
with Judy Foster. So she plays a real character of this.
That was a real scientist.
Yes, starting her PhD in Cambridge, I believe, in England, where they got this signal, and it was an intelligence signal, meaning you know it had the architecture, and they went to all of the radio stations and TV stations to say, "Are you broadcasting this signal?" And they said no. So for a whole 3 days, they thought this was the first contact. What it turns out is they discover pulsar stars. So these stars that pulsate and send what it looks like an intelligent type of code through the airwaves.
So this nexus of imagination and science, you know, I think if you look at the major, just like Einstein, it was his imagination that brought him to, you know, the theory of relativity. And it's just a great combination. And what, so I'm going to ask you now, can we talk about your world record? Because that's okay. It's also, it's hard to know where to start, but the three goals are great. Of course, this is about sustainability, but you did just break a world record and you flew where?
Yeah. So again, we did not break a world record. We passed the world record altitude. To break the world record, you need the judges there. We're gonna repeat this, weather permitting, and airspace and logistics and health and all of that, in a couple of weeks or three, in California. Near Bishop, California.
And you fly there because?
We fly there for several reasons. The first reason is that we have an agreement with the Air Force, with Edwards Air Force Base, that control the restricted airspace, which is called R-2508. And we have an agreement with that we can fly high there.
Okay.
So that's the biggest one. Reason being is there's nothing below you. It's high desert, basically, and mountains. In Florida, that would be really, really hard to do. The second reason is the temperatures. They're colder than here, elevation. And the third one, has to do with humidity. Humidity is not good for world records.
That's not a good Florida thing.
Yeah, I just gave you three things.
Right.
We do not have mountains, we do not have low humidity, mm-hmm. and we do not have cold temperatures. Mm-hmm. And obviously we have one of the busiest airspace in the world because, you know, you have Miami, Orlando, Jacksonville, right. Naples, Tampa, Sarasota.
Yeah, you don't want to be bumping into anything up there.
Yeah, so. Correct. So that's the reason why we go there. And last week we had a test flight that was the aim was to go to 23,000 feet. When we got to 22,000 feet, I got a level off from the military controllers. That meant, you mm-hmm. know, hey, wait a few minutes
they wanted
here.
You to...
So I discontinued the test at that point. It would have been a world record if the judges were there. It was a world record altitude, meaning mm-hmm. you know it surpassed by like 1,500 feet the mm-hmm. the prior record. And Kathy, to be honest, the every test flight now is a world record altitude. So in other words, we're going higher than
you
other
just
people.
Keep going.
Exactly. So we're not necessarily like. We're excited about the event, but it will get surpassed again and again and again as we go farther along. You know.
If you're just joining us, my guests are Miguel Iturmendi and Javier Marino, and they are working with a plane called Helios Horizon. That's also the name of their project. And this is an electric airplane that is going up, way higher than most people expect. I think you're kind of shocking because there are other countries that are working on this technology, but for two guys or, you know, your team who are kind of working out of your garage, so to speak, you're a small team. You're not, you know, you count on sponsors, you count on donors, but you're surpassing them. Is that right? In terms of what you're accomplishing?
Yes, that is correct. We are working, we're a team of about 11 or 12 people mm-hmm. Working around the world. These are people that Miguel knows and I know for many years, and they're helping us out voluntarily. These are all PhD, they have master degrees, engineering. So they're here when they come to help the project. Now, for us, the team here in Sarasota, we have four people. The rest of the people is around the world, right?
Yeah, that is correct, Javier. We have 11 people, and they're all over the world. And we spend most of our money, Kathy, in moving people around because reality is companies, when we call them and tell them what we're doing because they know us from prior electric projects, mm-hmm. they normally donate the stuff.
Okay.
So the equipment, and we have a facility here that I own and near the airport, and we have all of the flight test instrumentation that is extremely expensive, and of course we get the labor for free. So most of the expenses is just moving people around.
So this is really a labor of love, and because of your prior work in engineering and aviation, you have access to materials and supplies that, let's face it, most people. There's a reason you can do this at this scale and such major work is because of your very broad work history and contact network, right?
That is correct.
That is correct. Yes.
People who are giving.
Most
and
definitely.
this is really a labor of love. I mean, you guys are.
Yeah. And we're leveraging these relationships with universities. You know, University of North Dakota is helping us with their life science laboratory and physical science laboratory. They have a hyperbaric chamber where we can go and test things at altitude, including myself and our pressurized suit and so on. So it's quite interesting. You know, because of all these relationships, we're able to leverage access to places that we, you know, normally the door will be closed.
Right.
And even if you could open it, it will cost a lot of money. Yeah, I mean, we conduct tests, Kathy, that for a single day might require 30 people and an ambulance and a doctor on standby. So imagine the kind of money we're talking about. And we've been able to do it for free. Because our prior successful projects
And folks want to be part of it. Right?
Yeah, I think people are excited about it. And the other thing, Kathy, is that we are very result-orientated. So we are creating a lot of results every 2 or 3 or 4 months. We get a new world record, a new high altitude. We test something that hasn't been tested before.
New technology.
Correct. Yeah. So we're very result orientated because I didn't want to waste any time. This is costing me a fortune in lost wages from a regular job.
Well, you've put in quite a bit of your own money.
Yeah,
into
that is
this
correct
as well.
Yeah. My wife is listening, so we shouldn't talk about that.
Well, I have to say, and you were telling me on the way over, you know, Dad's insisting on listening to the news, and your daughter wants to hear Taylor Swift on the radio.
That is correct.
You,
yes.
You are living.
She's a Swiftie.
Yeah. She's a Swiftie, as am I. But you are living the, you know, you are living a wonderful regular quote unquote life of a dad and a husband,
yeah.
And you're doing this amazing project. Javier, you were explaining to me what is the secret sauce, because obviously you've got French teams working, Swiss, Germans, and yet you're surpassing them. And I know you can't, you know, you're not gonna tell us your secrets, but what is it that you all have been able to do that has you ahead of, you know, with the technology?
Well, The secret to the sauce, mm-hmm, is Miguel. Yeah. That's the secret to the sauce. Miguel have worked in all these projects for many years,
okay,
with the Swiss, the French, and many other places around the world. And he have developed himself what he think it works. And we're proving that it works. So that's the secret sauce, is Miguel's years of experience and, mm-hmm, knowing what it could work for electric aviation, and surround by a team of people that can help when we need help right away.
Yeah.
We're talking about a person that can fly from the Netherlands for 3 days to do a mold for free. I mean, this is, he's
so
doing it out of love.
That level of excitement.
Yes.
Yeah,
yeah,
there is. If you want a technical answer of what the secret sauce is, it's thermal control. Thermal control requires a lot of engineering, and it requires weight. You know, it weighs a lot of pounds into the airplane,
mm-hmm,
and has volume, pumps, many hoses and, mm-hmm, fans and many other things. And so the designers have decided that they didn't need that. I know from prior experiences that you absolutely need to control
temperature,
and you need to do it from the get-go. The reason, Kathy, is,
okay,
that as we go higher, air density dissipates, you know, mm-hmm, it's less dense there. And so heat doesn't have where to go, like on the ground. Anybody can relate to this, because we all use a normal oven, right? You know,
right,
you have a heating element, you trap the air inside, and, mm-hmm, you put, let's say, 400 degrees Fahrenheit to cook a pizza, and the air, eventually, the air around that heating,
right,
element,
mm-hmm,
becomes 400 degrees. Now, if that door was open, and now you put that at 50,000 feet, where the pressure of the atmosphere is exactly one-tenth of what it is at sea level here in Sarasota,
mm-hmm,
the molecules of air are so far apart that heat cannot dissipate. So basically, you can put that heating element and put your hand next to it, and you wouldn't feel anything.
Yeah.
So basically, the motor controller, the motor, I don't mean to bore your listeners.
I don't find it boring, because,
yeah,
this is like, why is it hard? And so you've got to keep your battery cool. That's the big thing,
and
right?
The motor controller.
And you got to, yeah, keep you cool. You're in a non-pressurized cabin up there.
Yeah, so it gets really cold. We have electric clothing. Really, truly what it is motorcycle gear,
uh-huh,
for cold climates. You know, at 50,000 feet, typical temperature, you're looking at minus 70 degrees Fahrenheit to minus 90 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah.
So it gets pretty cold. So you have electric socks and socks to go to, you know,
mm-hmm,
high climbing gear. You know, like your socks could be $200, your boots could be $1,000, and it's the same.
This is stuff you have laying around the house, Miguel, because you've done this before.
Yeah, correct.
Right?
Yes, because I've been higher than that before in other projects, and they were kind enough to let me have the equipment, or
okay,
the people that make this equipment have donated it to us. So we have pressure suits from NASA and from other organizations, and that basically is.
Does your wife ever get frustrated with all the stuff that you have in the house? Or is it not in the house? Maybe it's not in the house.
This morning she wanted me to change a smoke detector, and my daughter was wondering why I can bring an electric airplane to the stratosphere but not change the smoke detector. So I think she's listening, so she'll tell me afterwards.
Yes, yeah. So, because I was reading. See, you know, I have a son who jumps out of airplanes for fun. That is not my thing. You would not catch me. I'm very happy that there are people like you in the world who figure all of this stuff out and then make it very safe and comfortable for the rest of us down the line. But the risk is very real. I read something in a local article about the human, blood can boil. You tell me the risks that you have to mitigate when you're up there?
Yeah. So in other projects, we have gone higher than 60,000 feet. And at, I believe, 60,000 or 61,000, one of the two or somewhere in between, is called the Armstrong line. And the Armstrong line is where the partial pressure of the atmosphere is so low, roughly about a half of a PSI. We're here at 14.7. So at a half of PSI, the liquid...
PSI is per square inch?
Yeah, okay. a pound per square inch. Yeah. Mm. So above 60,000 feet, a liquid will boil because there's not enough pressure to keep it in liquid form.
So it becomes a gas. There. Yeah, everything's okay.
Yeah, so basically we're made out of liquid, right? Mm-hmm. Not just blood, but there's water all over. You know, if you want to lose weight, to do it, would be to go over 60,000 feet and let the water in your body lose it. It'd be very painful and you will die a certain death.
But no thanks.
I will not recommend that, yes.
Right. Okay, so...
So that's one of the risks of high altitude
flying.
And
your prior projects, because you just got a lifetime, or I think it was in the past year, John Travolta presented you with a... okay, go ahead. Javier's correcting
2019.
Me. Oh, it was 2019.
Yes.
Okay. With a Lifetime Achievement Award, right?
It was inducted to the Living Legends of Aviation.
That's pretty young. How old are you?
I'm... 52,
if you don't mind my asking.
Yeah, 52, almost 53. Yeah.
Okay,
so I was 49 or 48.
Yeah. 5 years ago.
48, I was 48.
Yeah. So is it the cooling technology that you've developed that has you outpacing other countries?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we control temperature. Again, you cannot let it get hot because you keep climbing, so you're not gonna be able to dissipate that heat. It's only gonna get worse. So once that you start building it, it will run away from you.
Okay.
And that will be the end of the flight. If you don't. Batteries at a certain temperature and motor controllers catch on fire. Anybody that knows what lithium-ion-based batteries knows that a fire cannot be contained because it's a chemical fire, so you cannot put it out.
Yeah.
Also, if you've seen pictures of our airplane, there's no way to escape it. The only thing, I wear a parachute, the only thing you could do on an electric airplane if it catches on fire is to jump.
So, getting to, because we were talking before the show about you get asked what it's like to be up there, and there's so much that you have to be aware of, I would imagine. And it reminds me, because in my prior work, I would deal with physicians. And, the best surgeons are always looking to, they're always looking to mitigate risk, right? They're always looking to control the environment. It's not a joyride experience, is it? I mean, you must have to be extremely aware and careful when you're up there.
So you got it right, Kathy. We, mitigating risk is the name of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a very small airplane, as you've seen on the picture. So we don't have a lot of automatic systems. So it's all based on human interface, human input, in this case from me, the test pilot. So you're quite busy during the flight. So it's not joyride. You got a couple of seconds on the apogee, highest point of the flight, where you might take a picture outside and a picture of the altimeter, just because that's kind of your trophy, right? Since we're looking for altitude, and then you really have to really quickly concentrate again on the way down because there's still a lot of risk coming down. Yeah.
And the goal is the stratosphere.
Correct.
How high is the stratosphere, and what is it different? What makes it the stratosphere?
Yeah, great question. So we're right here. We're on the tropopause, and between the troposphere and the stratosphere is the tropopause. So the stratosphere starts when the temperature stops declining. You know, so it goes the other way. So the temperature goes down pretty much at a constant rate between sea level and about 11, 12, 13 kilometers. So roughly 36 to 40,000 feet. Mm-hmm. Around 40,000 feet, you have this pause, the tropopause, where the temperature stays the same. So normally it will go to about minus 70 or so Fahrenheit. Then it stays there. And when the stratosphere starts a little higher, let's say 4,000 feet higher, so about 42,000, 44,000 feet, the stratosphere means that parcel of air, it actually starts warming.
Okay.
So.
Oh, I didn't turn my phone off. I hope you all can't hear that. But anyway, so commercial airliners, they're not in the stratosphere, are they?
No. Some business jets, however, flies at this lower part of the stratosphere, around 41,000, 43,000, 44,000 feet,
okay,
or normally in the tropopause. So commercial airliners fly between 30,000 and 40,000 feet, which is still
right.
The tropopause,
yeah.
The troposphere, I'm sorry.
Right.
So just below the tropopause.
Yeah. And Javier, there's an ability when you're in that space to collect data, right? And to collect samples. And you were explaining to me why the electric technology is superior for doing that.
Yes, well, the electric technology will not pollute. So the samples that we can take, they're actually true samples versus a combustion engine that it pollutes in the stratosphere. So for us, there is a lot of work to do in the stratosphere. And with this plane, if we get the objectives that we have, I think we can do a lot of things within the stratosphere than other planes cannot do.
Right now, Kathy, if you want to get a clean sample of air in the stratosphere, you send a balloon. But balloons cannot station keep. So in other words, they're only at every altitude for a very brief period of time, and then they just go wherever they go, higher and then into whatever the current of air is. With an airplane that doesn't pollute, you can target what parcel of air you want. So, not only, in the longitudinal plane, but also in the altitude plane.
Everybody, if you're just joining me, you're listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida. Programming at WSLR is supported by listeners like you and by Ringling College Galleries and Exhibitions. Ringling College's 2023-24 exhibition season features art from Ringling students, alumni, faculty, and nationally recognized artists from a wide range of mediums and from diverse backgrounds. More information is available at ringlingcollege.gallery. My guests are Miguel Itermendi and Javier Marino. They are talking about their project and plane and Helios Horizon, which is an electric plane that is leading the world in technology and breaking records. And you're here in Sarasota. You're doing this work in Sarasota. I hear that Spain would like to claim you, that they would like to see the Spanish flag on the plane. I'm sure everybody wants to claim, your work. And
yes, we have a lot of people that say, well, you guys both are from Spain.
Mm-hmm.
How possible? Well, we both are from Spain. We're from Madrid, both of us.
Mm-hmm.
But we live in the United States.
We're U.S. citizens.
Yeah. Citizens.
Yes.
And the technology has been developed here. We've been working here. Our families are here. So the project is a U.S. project, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And the technology is
Yeah, and the sponsors and the donors.
Everybody's here.
It's mostly a local project as far as where the money came from and the talent, you know, the people.
And I know the governor of Iowa, so many interesting people have winter homes in Sarasota. Tell me about the governor of Iowa, the former governor, and what...
Chet Culver. He is a very interesting person. He's been helping us already for quite some time. Mm-hmm. When I talked to him about the projects, he really light up and he enjoyed the talks. And then finally he met Miguel and he really, I mean, enjoyed to be part of this project. And he's been helping us with talking with people and doing other things. The former governor was involved with a lot of the renewables, and he's been leading in Iowa. Iowa is one of the states that export energy, and it's because of the wind energy.
Yeah. So that's amazing to me, and it's so under the radar. How you never hear about that, but Iowa is one of the leading states when it comes to renewable energy.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
And it was his administration and leadership.
Well, he was part of very much what they did, and they create a lot of jobs for the state, and they mm-hmm. did a lot of good things. And right now, they export energy. So,
and funny enough, they collaborated and built with Spanish companies. The region that I'm from in Spain is where the companies came from to Iowa to install this.
So interesting. Yeah. Was there something about the science education where you're from, or like a common thread that you got this?
Yeah, the big problem with sustainability to produce electric power on the grid has been the initial investment. But once that is done, it lowers the cost. And obviously, it's better for the planet. Mm. And so there's other countries like Spain and Germany and France that have been maybe ahead of the United States on mm-hmm. that sense. It's interesting what's happening in sustainability right now with renewables, like solar panels. Solar panels have gone down in price because the Chinese are making them like crazy, right? And the reason why they are is because they use it to generate their own power. And so they're producing it for themselves. And the world is benefiting from that because you ended up, as a consumer, being able to buy cheaper solar panels. And, of course, this is good for not only the environment, but it could be good for your pocketbook.
So there was just cheaper. An earlier commitment.
I think so. That's what I'm trying to say.
But that's pretty much what it was. I want to go back to the space mafia.
Oh,
that's
yes.
a cute little phrase.
Well, Forbes magazine said that in 90-something.
I know, but somebody
read it and they said, "What about the space mafia?"
And this was your graduate studies program where Clark was a counselor,
he was the chancellor of the program. Yeah.
Okay, and that was the International Space University.
Yeah, correct. Which is in Europe and.
Okay, so tell me, what kind of, because it's so interesting to me, there's all of these, when you focus, like when we went to the moon, right? And I was a little kid watching, these men walking on the moon. And there's so much collateral technology, good collateral in a good way, these things that that come from those projects. For instance, your battery technology mm-hmm. would be pretty awesome in other applications, right?
Yes, correct. Yes.
Yeah. So tell me about your colleagues in that program and the stuff that's come out of that program, because it sounds like you've earned quite a reputation.
So I think the way the summer program for the International Space University started from a guy named Peter Diamandis, which was a brilliant scientist out of MIT, and he was very, very young when he started, and he convinced on space agencies, mainly NASA and the European Space Agency, to start giving money and select people in every country to be sent together to a host university that would be different every year, and you put them all to live in the same hotel mm-hmm. and put them 24/7 for 10 weeks to work hard in a topic that has to do with space. So the way it worked is that you have to apply, you know, every country will apply, and mm-hmm. they will select who were the winners of this scholarship. It didn't cost anything. Normally, you have to be a grad student, but when I did it, which is almost 30 years ago, half were people with master's degrees and the other half were doing their PhDs. And you work on normally they will choose two topics every summer, and you break into two different teams, and you just work and produce some normally a research paper that mm-hmm. that was normally a book, you know, and that will get published. After that, these people will go into work into space agencies, private companies, and so on. So a magazine ended up investigating this and call it, well, these people, when they graduate, they ended up being the head of all these. So they're yeah. placing their people in places, and they call it the space mafia. I have to say, Kathy, mm-hmm. that even though that I have, I guess, that badge of honor, I have not kept in touch with most of these people. I was just in JSC in NASA working mm-hmm. with the lunar suits, the new lunar suits, for an intense three days of work about 2 weeks ago. And I saw some of ex-ISUers that are now the owners of the companies that are building these suits.
The ISU, or International yeah. Space University.
I won't mention the company, but this very famous company that does space systems for the International Space Station, NASA, spacesuits, and so on. I was with the owner, and he says, I heard you're ISU. And I'm like, you're ISU, right? And he says, yeah, I'm 91. What are you? And I'm like, I'm 99. He's like, well, I guess I'm a little older than you. I'm like, yeah, you're a little older than me.
But you know that cross-pollination is so incredible, right? To kind yes. of have this networking yeah. Yeah. and working on really exciting projects as a young person. And it comes, you know, you've got your network now. It's the whole reason you can do what you're doing. I find it very fascinating, and explain, this is really an academic project, isn't it? I mean, you guys aren't necessarily
very much
looking to profit from this.
Not at all. As a matter of fact, we get a lot of people, local people, wanting to invest.
Invest,
and there's nothing to invest because we're going to give the intellectual property away.
Wow.
To the universities and for the younger generations.
That's kind of what you do, isn't it?
It's a little bit of the Florida, Sarasota lifestyle, you know.
Yeah.
I'm much more worried about whether I will get a good spot to park on and go to the beach.
Yeah.
Yeah. Than making money. But we do require money to do what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And we are partnering with schools, with universities, with companies that want to put yeah. their name on the plane.
We're looking for sponsors and we're looking for donors. Obviously, we can support this constantly ourselves. This project, just Kathy, to give you an idea, they cost anywhere starting at $50 million to $200 million. That's what companies out there, private companies, and helped by governments, they're getting. We have done that, if I can see the amount that we have. We spent $500,000
of
it's
most
ridiculous,
of it Miguel's
yeah.
money.
Amazing.
And some good donors, and, and but
local
Miguel
donors,
spent
yeah.
the majority of the money.
And your results are superior.
And our results are better than any other
thank
company.
God for that, Kathy, because otherwise, if we would have done all this last a little bit over 2 years, all this effort and come back empty, it would have been heartbroken for not just for me, but for everybody. So it's good to get. That's what I meant the other day when I said that this was a very meaningful result to get to 22,000 feet, because we're only using about 55% of the battery to do that. And so our predictions.
You're only using 55% of the battery to get to 22,000 feet.
Yes.
Correct. Yeah. So our predictions, our model. Mm-hmm. And our results so far, there'll be a point where it's not like this, but so far they're very close to each other, and that is incredibly rewarding to me.
So here's the thing, I mean, to put your own investment in, like, you must have been pretty confident, you know, you're an engineer. You must have been pretty confident of your science, of your
Yeah, some other people might call it something else.
Yeah,
I mean, you know,
Kathy, I can tell you that when we were talking the first few weeks that we were talking about the project, one of my questions to Miguel was how confident we are that the project. Mm-hmm. I said, Javier, I don't know, because with this is a and, you know, it's an experimental project. Mm-hmm. But I'm confident that what I know, I think we can get the results that we're expecting. At that point, even though I was going to do it no matter what, because mm-hmm. it was just friends and we wanted to do this, and it was part for me, was almost an adventure. It is an adventure. But he was confident that he could do this. And looking at all the other projects that are spending $50 million, $75 million, and they cannot get, and they've been doing this for 10 years, mm-hmm. within the last 2 years, we have 3 national records and 2 world records confirmed. We have the 22,000 that is going to get confirmed now. But what I mean is our results within 2 years, without having the support and having the sponsors there, we have done a very good results. I mean, we have done, it's already public. You can look at it, our records, and we're mm-hmm. there.
So. You know, but there's a difference between, so one of my favorite movies is Apollo 13, mm-hmm. and how these, because you see, like, those astronauts, it's not like they just had to learn to fly, right? I mean, they know Newton's laws. I mean, they know what they're doing up there. And my favorite part of that movie is where Ed Harris's character tells the engineers, failure is not an option. We have to figure this out.
You got to fail on the ground so you don't fail up there.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, we do a lot of testing. This is what happens in Sarasota. We do a tremendous amount of testing. We have built small hyperbaric chambers, freezers, all kinds of stuff. And it's kind of funny because we use whatever materials we can find on Amazon or people donate, and we build these machines to test, because somebody was that works for NASA came and saw one of the chambers we made, and he said, good Lord, this looks ridiculous. And I'm like, yeah, but what we're testing inside doesn't know that is inside of a turkey pan, basically, a cooking, you know, it doesn't know.
It's like they made in that movie to clean the air. I mean, it's crazy little contraption, but it worked.
They were scrubbing CO2, which could build up in a closing cup. You know, mm-hmm. that's the byproduct of you breathing is CO2.
So if schools, there's so much opportunity here locally for there to be a cultivation. I mean, I was at a gathering, it was the Tiger Bay gathering of university presidents, and the USF president for Sarasota Manatee was talking about their intention to have an aeronautic engineering program here in Sarasota. You know, you've got this issue with new college land and the FAA. It just seems like it's a ripe time for these universities locally to partner with you. Are you talking with them yet, or have they approached you?
Not yet. But you're right. It's the right timing in history. Kathy, we know about new space, right? SpaceX and all these mm-hmm. new companies. There's the same thing is happening in aviation. We call it new aerospace, where you have over 1,000 companies, about half of them, in the U.S. that are doing electric aviation. And so you have, you know, if they average 100 employees, that's 100,000. That's 50,000 just in the U.S. We just don't have that many people. We are importing engineers from China and India, like you won't believe it.
In this
and
country.
And Europe.
Yeah.
We need
kids to learn.
Correct.
Yeah. How about local high schools? And, you know, I know you're open to talking with them, but if people are hearing this and they want to be part of this, how do they get in touch with you? How do they learn more? Maybe they want to sponsor. Maybe they want to have you at a high school or a middle school. You know, maybe it's a hopefully local university leader that wants to partner.
Yeah, I can leave my contact here with you.
No,
somebody call.
Oh, do you have a website though?
No.
Okay.
No, we are all engineers.
Well, the station will work.
We're so busy we don't even have a website. The way to get in touch with us is just go to LinkedIn and type Helios Horizons, or type Helios Horizons in Google or your web search.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go to LinkedIn, you'll see the Helios Horizon project, and you can send us a message, and we'll get in touch with you. We are
Yeah. Are you tweeting or Xing, whatever they call it now?
No.
About, no, you're not. No.
But I can also leave my number and email, and if someone needs to contact, I mean, their listenings of yours,
they can
give a call to the station.
Yeah, but if you also Google us, our contact information is public.
Yeah.
You can see it's info@helioshorizons.com, but anybody with a phone can Google us and...
Yeah,
there's a lot of information out there.
Wow.
And we would love to talk to you.
Yeah. I was really kind of stunned when I met you at Eileen Hampshire's Got a Shop Downtown, Art to Walk On. And I met you, Javier, and you started telling me all about this. And I could kind of feel my dad over my shoulder, you know, because it's incredible. It's so incredible. And I get kind of emotional. We need good news.
Well, that's one of the things that we're trying to give good news to the people, especially the people of Sarasota, and we're local, and to tell them that we are breaking records and we're doing things for the city. The name of Sarasota is out there, and people looking at us, and like the Germans, the Swiss, and now they start putting Sarasota in the top of the
list. I think we're starting to make these Swiss and German companies and French companies nervous, because I get a lot of emails and contacts from them asking questions. And because they know me, I worked in their projects over the last 10 years. I was lucky enough to do all the World Electric Aviation records in other projects. Some of them that Kathy were funded over $240 million in funding just to get where they got. And we want to put the name of Sarasota in the map as far as aviation, specifically electric aviation.
For something just groundbreaking and sustainable and great for the planet. And, you know, the commercial piece of this isn't really necessarily your concern, right? You're looking to get nailed down the science, but
someone would be somebody else, you know, somebody else will do that. That's not what I know. I know flight testing, I know physics, and that's what I studied in college, and I'm trying to contribute in what I can. Somebody else will take all of this and make money with it, and I'll be celebrating that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, what a fabulous, fabulous project. You know, I have a Facebook group called Citizens for Sarasota County. And if people want to get in touch and support your work with, you know, bringing you in front of children or neighbors and friends, I think it for the community to be supporting you and encouraging our young people. You know, Pineview was just named the number one high school in the state of Florida.
Fantastic.
What an opportunity for kids at Pineview to learn from you directly and to see what an amazing thing an engineering, aeronautical engineering career could be. So I'm totally inspired. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you
for your work. Yeah, absolutely. Everybody, you have been listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida. Programming at WSLR is supported by listeners like you and by Ringling College Galleries and Exhibitions. Ringling College's 2023-24 exhibition season features art from Ringling students, alumni, faculty, and nationally recognized artists from a wide range of mediums and from diverse backgrounds. More information is available at ringlingcollege.gallery. And before we go, when can we expect, I know it might change, but that stratosphere goal is, you're thinking 2026?
We start walking towards that. If everything goes well in the rest of 2024, it will start in 2025. Very likely we'll reach in early 26.
Okay, so you'll come back maybe and talk about that when that's...
Definitely.
It will be our pleasure, yeah.
All right. Everybody, thank you so much for joining us. Be sure to stay tuned for more public affairs programming here on WSLR. And I want to thank everybody who supported the show and the station during the Giving Challenge. You made it happen. We so appreciate you. Have a great day.
Honestly, I didn't die because My name is Anikulapu. I have death in my pouch. I can't die. They can't kill me.
Now, you're listening to WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Ukraine has been aggressed by Russia, and there are unbelievable suffering in Ukraine, and at the same time telling us not to act on the multiple bombing and absolute suffering of the people of Gaza.
Amnesty International sounds the alarm in its annual human rights report, saying the world has entered an era devoid of international law. We'll speak with the Secretary General of Amnesty International, Agnes Kayamar. But first, we go to Gaza to get the latest on the ground as bodies continue to be recovered from mass graves at the Nasser Medical Complex. Then protests against Israel's assault on Gaza rock U.S. campuses from coast to coast amidst an intensifying police crackdown.
This movement extends far beyond the militarized gates of Colombia, beyond the city of New York, to the students of Gaza, whose classrooms have been burned to the ground.
We'll speak with a Columbia University student who was arrested last week, and with a graduate student at the University of Texas, Austin, where dozens of students were arrested yesterday. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org.